It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law.
I like how you pointed at yourself. I just have to point that out.
Isn't that cool?
You go, that's me, with your thumbs.
You have to explain that, though. What did I do?
When the announcement said, and Alan Gervie, you went like this. And he pointed his thumbs at himself like I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you know, it's so great to have a co-host here. Because last week when we started our new season, yes, Gervie's Law starts its new season in March, not in January. I needed a couple of extra months. You know, the kids are driving me a little bit crazy. I needed a couple months off. And we're back. Gervie's Law is back. As of last week, we had a great show with Suzanne Summers, who did a great job. If you missed it, check out the podcast at gervieslaw.com or at KBC.
Thighmaster,
yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, she was great. She sent me, after the show, these two big sacks of Gut Helper.
What is that?
It helps you gut, your gut.
Like good flora and stuff like that for
exactly.
Digestion. You want to pass one of those sacks to me?
You want a sack?
Sure, I'll try it.
Well, we'll see.
She's pretty incredible. She's endured in Hollywood for a long time.
Yeah, she has. And it was so sweet for her to do that. Thank you, Suzanne. And it was a great show. If you haven't heard it, check it out. And if I don't like the stuff, but I'm sure I will, I'm going to give it to Leanne Tweeden.
Hello.
Who is co-hosting. It's so nice to have a co-host today. And let's talk a little bit about Leanne. For all of you who may not be as familiar with her as you would like to be, and most people are, but I want to remind people, it's been how long since you've been sitting here at KBC doing a show?
So the last time I was in this chair was, what, about Christmas 2019? The last time I was here, I was hosting with Dr. Drew. We had a midday show, Dr. Drew Midday Live with Leanne Tweeden.
Wow.
So it was right before COVID hit and the world completely changed. And I became a stay-at-home mom, and everybody knows how the world changed for them. So I stayed at home for a whole year and homeschooled our kids on Zoom like everybody else probably. And then I decided to just stay a stay-at-home mom, and I kind of love it.
What does it feel like to get out after all that time?
You know, to be honest, I don't know if you know, since the first time I think you saw me, my hair was really long. I sort of kind of got lost in the world, probably like a lot of people. You became a hermit, because remember, like, we went to lockdown, right? It was a lot of just sort of self-preservation, right? Everybody was trying not to get COVID. Everybody was just trying to, you know, that, you know, we learned a lot of new words and terms, right? You know, quarantining and washing your hands all the time and, you know, it's
and
distancing.
Leaving packages and, that were sent from Amazon outside for 5 days
before
you opened them.
Remember in the beginning, it was like, wipe down your fruit and wash it in the sink. I mean, it was so bizarre.
But it was even worse because we were told to take our clothes off when we got home.
Right.
So I walked in every day to my house completely naked.
I wasn't quite that. Well, actually,
my
it wasn't
kids
even,
were like, Dad, put on some clothes.
You know, it's funny. I wasn't even that extreme because I didn't even leave the house for a long time. My husband did because he had to keep working. He's in the Air National Guard. My life was at home with the kids. I didn't leave for a long time. I didn't go to a store. My husband did everything.
Wow.
His life did not change. Mine, I became a hermit. I was afraid to leave the house.
You know something, Leanne? What a great way to spend time with your kids. If I had two kids as cute as yours, I would love staying home with them.
I got to see them grow up and do
a lot
of things.
That was your cue. You missed your cue. Oh. You're supposed to say you do have two kids as cute as you.
Well, thank you. I'm biased, but thank you.
No, you've seen my kids.
And
you
do have two
cute
kids.
Okay, thank you. There you go.
And my son does love Harper. They play violin together because randomly, before we even knew each other, come to find out, our kids actually go to school together.
Is that weird?
What a weird world, right, that the powers that be or whatever powers brought us together.
That was so
bizarre.
And
then we find out our children go to the same school, and then we now sort of coexist in the same universe, right?
And it was so funny because we had no idea, and we were talking, and you mentioned something about the scarecrow, and I'm like, funny? I just heard there's a little guy named Kane who's the scarecrow in Harper's play.
And do you know now that you've told me that some girls have, you know, have crushes on my son, every time I mention Harper or that I'm working with you, Kane literally stuffs his head under the pillow. Like he turns beet red and he like, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to work with Harper's dad. And he's like, oh, and he like disappears.
Yeah, well,
you know,
that happened at that age. Today because they are. And I mentioned to Harper, and you know, it was such a compliment because usually she will say something like, oh, don't talk about that. And she just started blushing. And my son Hudson looked and said, oh, so you like Kane then?
Oh, she is she one of the girls?
I don't know. She took the fifth. This is a legal show, folks, and I had to get that in here. Let's talk a little bit about Leanne Tweeden because we could talk for hours, but let's find out. Now, you worked as a hostess at Hooters?
Oh, my gosh. That was back when I was a teenager. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I was.
We're just going to go through this.
Sure.
And tell me if there's anything wrong. Say, no, that's not true. You were in a Hooters calendar?
I was. So I lived in Colorado. After I moved out from Virginia, where I grew up, I moved to Colorado on my way to California to live the dream and, yeah, you know, be a model or, you know, end up in television like I did in my career. I was out there. I learned how to ride dirt bikes and I was doing all that kind of stuff because I was a tomboy. And I used to go eat with my boyfriend at the time. I would go eat at Hooters after riding dirt bikes in Colorado. And the manager at Hooters in Colorado was like, do you want to be in our calendar? And,
really?
And I was like, okay. You know, I was thinking, oh, that's kind of cool. I could make some money and, you know.
Maybe get some free chicken wings?
Oh, absolutely. Hello, who doesn't like Hooter chicken wings? I mean, really. But he's like, but you have to, and he worked for corporate Hooters, so he knew all the guys, right? But he's like, you have to be an employee of Hooters first. So technically, you had to kind of check that box. But I wasn't old enough to serve beer because I was 17. So I became a hostess, you know, the girl that wears all white and just sat people. So I'd be like, hi, welcome to Hooters. You know, how many in your party?
Yeah. See, I don't remember the hostess because when I would go into Hooters back in the day, I would just start quickly looking at trying to pick which section I want to sit in according to what Hooter girl was in that section.
Sure. There you go.
Sorry, I didn't look at the hostess.
Well,
but if you were there, I probably would have said hello and, you know,
if you came through a Hooters in Colorado Springs.
So you won first place in the Venus International Model Search.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's when I was in Colorado Springs too. And, so I won that and then that sort of really kind of catapulted my career. And then I was like, oh, okay, maybe I can do this and maybe have a career in modeling. And then after I won that, I came to LA and was able to, you know, start getting jobs. And I go, maybe I can make a career out of this. Because, you know, you never know, right? Like, everybody gets off the bus, you know, technically in California. And you think, you know, I'm a pretty big deal in whatever podunk town you come from. But then you come to LA and everybody's a big deal where they came from. And then you're just one of a many dozen.
And what happened to the boyfriend? Did you just leave him back in Colorado?
No, actually, you know, my boyfriend, he was a little bit older than me. And he was very supportive. And he realized, he's like, you need to go and do your own thing. I would only hold you back. And he was very supportive. And he's like,
nice
kind of, it was kind of like, you know, let the butterflies loose, you know, or let the birdie go. And John, he was a great man and sort of let me do my own thing. And I was always grateful for that.
We only have a minute and a half before we have to go to break. So let's go through this pretty quickly here. Fredericks of Hollywood.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
They were one of my biggest clients. I mean, I owe so much to them.
You modeled for them.
Oh, absolutely. For a long time, for a lot of years. I mean, they were a constant client. I mean, for a lot of women in this industry nowadays, it's hard to say that when girls say, oh, I'm a model, or, you know, people say, oh, I'm an actor. Like, if you're not like a big, huge A-list celebrity actor, right? It's like, I'm an actor / you know, waiter / Uber driver / you know, au pair / you know, babysitter, whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with that while you're chasing your dreams, right? But I was a model, period. I was
a real one
that was able
Fitness Beach.
I did fitness speech on ESPN.
That's right. Was that your introduction to sports? Because, you know, I love the modeling stuff and everything, but my heart is
well, I was
sports.
An athlete, right, in school. So I played a lot of sports. I mean, I was an athlete kind of growing up in school in the South in Virginia. So I did, you know, I was kind of like you. You have your kids in all different kinds of sports. I played all different kinds of sports in school. Every season I was doing a different kind of sport. So I love sports growing up too. So my love of sports, not only playing sports, but being a fan of sports. And my dad was a huge fan of sports. And, you know, growing up and, you know, we were Washington Redskins fans. I know that's not the name anymore. But
that's why you were so in love with John Riggin. And when you got a chance to meet him,
my favorite.
You have this picture with John Riggin, who played for the Washington Redskins, of course, the
love, number 44.
Fullback.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I've gotten to be on his radio show. I mean, I saw him on Radio Row once when I was at the Best Damn Sports Show, and I was, you know, at Radio Row, they have people set up, and I was at a table next to him, and I was going to be doing something else, and I looked over, and I'm like, oh my God, it's John Riggins. You know, I mean, like your childhood hero,
right?
You watched him take your team to the Super Bowl with your dad. That's my memories of my childhood. And I remember, I think his producer saw me like fangirling, you know, and his producer talked to my producer, and they were like, would she like to come on the show? And I'm just going, no, this is like my dad's going to freak out. You know, all I could think about was my dad would freak out if he knew his daughter was going to be on the radio with John Riggins. And I'm like, yes. So they kind of worked it out that I could do like, you know, like 7 minutes or something with John Riggins on his radio show. I mean, it was great. And then I got to do other times when I went home. We became friends, and then we did some USO stuff together.
That's so cool. And we're going to talk about that after break. I'm going to take a break in a second, but you just remind me of something, because I remember the same kind of experience with me. It was Kirby Puckett, who played for the Minnesota Twins. I loved Kirby Puckett. I had an opportunity to be in the dressing room. It was on my birthday, and someone had given me a book, and they said, get Kirby Puckett's autograph on the book. It was the Kirby Puckett's book. And I'm in there, and I'm holding the book, and there's big sign. It was the Angels down in Anaheim. There's a big sign that says, no autographs. Media has no autographs.
Right.
And I was supposed to be part of the media. I was fake media, and I'm as a lot of people were back then.
Yeah.
And sat there, and I'm shaking, and I met him, just like you're talking about with John Riggins. And then he's looking at me, and he says, you want me to sign your book? And I said, well, I can't. Look at the sign.
Oh.
And he said, man, if anyone gives you a trouble or a problem, they really are going to have to take care of me, Kirby Puckett.
Oh.
So I said, go do it.
And it's okay. It's okay if they say it.
I guess. I learned that. We're going to talk more to Leanne Tweeden. And by the way, the next thing we're going to talk about is Poker After Dark, NBC's Poker After Dark, who hosted that show.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And later, why don't you tell the folks who we're going to have on for all of you poker fans?
Andy Block, who's, if you know anything about poker, you've seen him play in World Series of Poker. You've seen him play in Heads Up on NBC, Poker After Dark. And he was also part of the MIT Blackjack Counting Team that was part of the movie 21 with Kevin Spacey, if you happen to see that.
Wow, I got to see it. I haven't seen 21.
I haven't either, actually. I never watched it.
Don't admit that.
Well, it's okay.
It's all right. Well, I'm going to tell him. And he is a Harvard Law graduate, because this is a legal show. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right, we're back with Leanne Tweeden, and we're getting ready to welcome Andy Block, poker player extraordinaire and brilliant person, as Leanne's just told me. That wasn't your walk-up music. Didn't you tell Wayman what you're supposed
to
play?
No, I think I just told you. I like that, though.
Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
All right.
I'm not. It's not hard to please me. It's
anything
okay.
She wants. Everything.
Thank you, Wayman.
All right. So before we took the break, we were talking a little bit to Leanne about some of the things that she has been doing. Just to introduce you all, if you haven't spent a lot of time with Leanne on KBC, on McIntyre in the Morning, and Dr. Drew Midday, let me ask you about your Fox Sports West, and that you were with the Angels doing pre and pro post game interviews. You did the best damn sports show, period.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sports stuff. And I know before the break you said you played a lot of sports. You were into sports. It's kind of my dream to be doing the sports stuff.
Yes.
What was it like being around all of these hunky athletes all the time?
Oh, I have some stories. Well, being a woman, for sure, when I first started my career, it was a lot different. You know, I mean, I think probably that my first foray into sports was, I said I rode a lot of dirt bikes. So I was into motocross and supercross, and I was the first female announcer of the U.S. Supercross series. So I went on tour and did all of the announcing for Supercross. I did all the post-race interviews. And, you know, I got my first taste of, because I grew up and rode dirt bikes, I didn't really get that from the people I rode with because they all knew me. But when I got around on the top level with the Jeremy McGraths and the Jeff Emigs and Ricky Carmichaels and you know, when people are around you and they don't know you per se, and they're going, oh, so who tells you what to say, or who gives you your questions, or, you know, whose daughter are you, or are you somebody's wife, or and I'm kind of like, you know, you're down on the floor of the stadium, and you're just trying to like watch the heats,
yeah.
And you're just trying to like, you know, and I'm going, well, if you stop interrupting me, maybe I can watch this heat so I can ask the right questions, you know, because I'm trying to pay attention so I know what to ask, you know, because I'm watching live just like you, so stop bugging me, you know. And I wasn't anybody's daughter, and I wasn't anybody's girlfriend, I wasn't anybody, you know, I'm just here trying to do my job. So I had to sort of get through that part, you
yeah.
know, of just being like, I'm here, I love the sport, I ride, I, you know, and I got the job. And I remember the first time that I was given the opportunity, I had to go to the Coliseum, and I was given the opportunity to announce the first race at LA Coliseum. And I'm going, oh my God, I have to announce in front of like 70,000 people here in LA, a Supercross event. And if I did okay, then they would see if they wanted to continue with me on in the tour, because they wanted to have a female presence, because they knew that there were a lot of women that were following the sport and that were part of the audience. And they knew they wanted to broaden their horizons, right? And so, you know, and I think that was just sort of the way the world was going, right? Having more female reporters, more sideline reporters in all sports. And you know, I did okay. And I just remember learning how to speak on a headset where the echoes
just like
inside
you are
of
now.
It. Well, but there was like, yeah, right, exactly. But there's like echoes in a stadium that you have no idea. You start talking.
Right.
And then like 4 seconds later, you hear yourself talking in an echo, and then I'd never experienced that before. I mean, things you're learning on the job that nobody can teach you, and then you mess up, and then you can't hear because bikes are really loud. When they were still riding two strokes, and I mean, now four strokes are a little bit deeper sounding, so it's a little bit of a different sound. And I mean, it was just, you know, it was so overwhelming, but I did okay. Ended up announcing the series for a few years. So that was a lot of fun. That was sort of my start into it. And I grew up around NASCAR, because like I said, I grew up in the South. So I got to do that, you know, after I started working for Fox Sports and the Best Damn Sports Show. But I got to do NASCAR Nation, and I got to be around things that
did
I really loved.
Did you like
really
that better
loved.
Than Poker After Dark?
Well, I grew up around that. My dad really loved that, too. So I really did love that. You know, I grew up rooting for Dale Earnhardt, No. 3, The Intimidator, yeah. You know. So that was just something in my roots. I grew up at the racetrack.
You're so far away from it now.
Oh, so. I mean, they still race it like Fontana, so, but it's not the same.
Is that how you got interested in the USO Tour? And how?
My father. Yes, because
father.
My father served.
He had a huge influence on you.
Very much so. Very much so. Daddy's little girl. My dad raced go-karts. And you know, he was, my dad taught me everything. You know, my dad taught me values, taught me love of country. He taught me about service. He taught me that your word is everything. He taught me that hard work pays off. And you know, you might not have a lot in life, but you have your word, right? And you never go back on your word. And he served in Vietnam. You know, he was drafted right out of high school. And he got his draft notice. And you know, at the time, there was a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, him and his friend in his neighborhood, they said, well, you know, a lot of people are being drafted into the Army, and the Army's a tough way to go. And so he and his friend just went, and they signed up and decided to join the Air Force. And they're like, either we can fly planes or we can do something in the Air Force. because he loved aviation and he loved tinkering on things. Because my dad, like, would grandfather and his.
A lot of people have that in their background, but they don't end up going on the USO tours with all of these people. Were you with Bradley Cooper?
I was with Robin Williams.
Jeffrey Ross, Robin Williams.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of really, really big celebrities that support the troops too. Yeah, I mean, I think it's something, you know, I think my story is my dad had there was a box of photos at my grandma's house, my dad's father, my grandmother, my dad's mom's house. That I found when I was a little kid, and there was a picture that of Raquel Welch, like a little black and white photo, and it said to, like, you know, to Bill, you know, love Raquel Welch or something. And I said, where did you meet a Hollywood movie star? You know, I'm like, you're from Virginia. And he's like, oh, she came to visit us with Mr. Bob Hope, you know, Fan Rang. And I'm like, what? And I said, they were in Vietnam. Like,
and then I never understood. Doing that.
Well, I remember I was in LA, and I think I had done Fitness Speech. I hadn't done the Best Damn Sports Show yet. And my agent at the time called me and said, hey, there's a USO tour going to, I think, South Korea. And they wanted to know if you would be interested in going. And I just, you know, there's one of those, you know, there's certain moments in your life that really have an impact. And I think that you will tell your children and they will tell their children and so on that, you know, you can be more proud of than a lot of things in your life, accomplishments, or no matter how much money you make or whatever. And that was one of those life change. I knew right at that moment, I could not wait to hang up the phone and tell my father. I said, absolutely. I have a passport. I don't care when
I'm ready to go.
I will go. Yes.
We only have one more minute before the break. And of course, there is an elephant in the room here when we talk about the USO tour. Everyone's looking around. Where's the elephant?
Yes.
The Al Franken situation. Tell us about that. That came from the USO tour.
It did.
And if people don't know, you can quickly in a minute tell us what happened.
I haven't even talked about it since then. He assaulted me on a backstage before we were going out on stage to do a quote unquote skit that he had come up with that, you know, I had no idea that he had done it before because I don't follow Al Franken and I didn't know he had done this before. And under the guise of we have to practice the skit or what have you, you know, I've done things with other comedians before, but he was so adamant on doing this, you know.
Why, because it had a kiss in it?
Right, but I'm like, you know, it was like a nothing thing in the skit. I'm like, oh, you know, you just practice it, but it wouldn't be like a real kiss, you know, it's like a fake thing, and it's just kind of a joke for the troops, you know what I mean? And he was like really adamant, and I'm like, Frank, whatever your name is. I'm like, we don't have to practice this thing. And it was like, you know, it's almost like one of those things where, you know, he turned into this other person, you know, and I'm going, it just was one of those things. And he did. He assaulted me. But there were so many other things that were happening on this tour
there was the picture, too, that went out viral.
Right, that I didn't see until the end of the tour that was on a disc that was handed out. That was the photo. I mean, I remember I was on the air with Doug McIntyre. I was asleep. I mean, I was like drooling. You know, I had Kevlar on and a helmet because we're in war zones and you can get shot. You know, so a lot of us sleep, you know, in our helmet and our vest on the plane. And that, you know, just the fact that he thought he could do that and that would be funny.
And you're showing people right now who can't see.
Radio. That my hands, you know, where his hands are grabbing onto on my chest, you know. But there were so many other things that were going on. It was just a whole week of just verbal, you know, trying to put me in my place the whole week.
And did you feel better when you were able to bring it out to public?
You know, I think when that whole Me Too thing happened, you know, there was just, I kind of put that away in a compartment because I'm a tough girl. You know what I mean? I'm not one of those. It's like, you know, so many people have accused me of like, oh, you wanted to make money. Oh, you just want to be famous. I'm like, those are the people that didn't know me. I'm like, I've been famous, quote unquote, or whatever for decades. You know, I'm like, I'm not writing a book. I'm not trying to make money. I mean, I literally have like hidden for years since that happened. You know, I didn't want anything out of it. I'm like, I wanted to tell my story because, it sort of came out. And I remember after the whole Me Too movement started happening and I was sitting on the couch one night and I just kind of was sitting there. It was like months happening. And I was sitting there, my husband and I were both looking at the TV, and I go, hey, I want to ask you something. And my husband, we weren't looking at each other, and he just goes, are you ready to tell your story? And we, like I said, we were just sitting next to each other. We didn't even look at each other. And it's like he knew. I mean, like I said, this was months after it kind of started. And I, you know, I think I was more worried about like maybe his career, if he it would, you know, hurt him or something like that more than me. Yeah. I didn't care about me or what it would do to me. You know, I just wanted the truth to be out there.
And now we do have to take a break, but now you're comfortable with it and you feel good about it.
Yeah, you know, people think that they were there and people, you know, want to, you know, people want to project whatever they want to project. I know what the truth is.
Right.
He's still angry. He's like, there should have been, you know, I mean, however many, 47, you know, people in Congress and Senate called for his resignation. But, you know, he's like, there should have been an investigation or whatever. I was open for all of it.
Yeah.
You know, I said, sure. But, you know,
it didn't happen.
Whatever happened, happened. And, you know, people said, well, should he resign? I said, the people of Minnesota should be their decision.
Right.
You know,
right.
I said my piece. I'm out of it.
Were a lot of women very complimentary?
Oh, the women were the worst. No, the women were the worst.
They weren't happy with you telling the story?
It depends upon what side of the aisle you were on.
That makes sense.
It's all political.
For another time, we got to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, keep singing. I bet our next guest has heard this song once or twice before.
You think?
It's a little cliche.
It is, but who doesn't love Kenny Rogers?
I'm not a big Kenny Rogers fan.
Really?
No. But I know you are, and I know you are a big poker fan. Leanne Tweeden actually hosted.
There was a few things, yeah.
A bunch of poker shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Poker After Dark on NBC, that came on after Saturday Night Live, and then the Heads Up Poker Championship on NBC for a few years.
I used to just watch Saturday Night Live just so I could see Poker After Dark.
Do you know, I had so many people tell me that, you know, Saturday Night Live would come on and then they'd fall asleep because it was late, right? And then they'd wake up and they'd hear my voice because I kind of have a gravelly voice, you know, and people would be like, I wake up and I hear your voice in bed. Like, oh, sorry.
Okay. I'm going to just
move on. Is that
TMI? Nah, that's okay. I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. But, you know, one thing is we're going to get this back to the focus here. And our next guest, Andy Block, as you described him, just a really nice guy.
Very.
Brilliant guy.
Yes.
Nice guy. Professional poker player and a licensed attorney. This is a legal show.
You love
Harvard,
that, don't you?
Harvard Law School.
Harvard. Is that a good
MIT.
School?
I don't think so. I went to Brown, so that's a little bit of a rival. But at MIT, he was part of the MIT blackjack team, which was featured in the book Bringing Down the House. And I know that's something that's intriguing to you, mm-hmm. Leanne. You talked about that.
And the movie 21, yeah.
And the movie 21. He started in his own instructional blackjack DVD, Beating Blackjack, which explains card counting. And so I know that has been very, very popular. If you go on the internet, you will see a lot of talk about that, people getting Beating Blackjack. He's had over $5 million in earnings in lifetime tournament winnings. And to think his parents probably just wanted him to be a lawyer.
Or an engineer.
He collaborated on a book called Life Lessons, Hold'em Poker Style, which is always interesting. He had Andy's Corner, which is some life lessons that you learn that you can use poker as an example, metaphor for, I'm sure. He skipped law school classes in his last week just to play in the World Series of Poker main event, won the World Series of Poker bracelet in 2012. Oh, wow.
I think he had to skip one, though, to graduate, if I remember correctly.
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah.
You know, he donated 100% of his winnings in the Full Tilt Poker to various charities. I mean, all-around good guy. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Andy Block.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, Leanne.
It's been a while.
Good to hear your voice.
Yes, thank you. You too.
Apparently, a lot of people heard her voice in their dreams.
Is that a bad thing?
Probably not. You know, it's incredible because a lot of people who know your story, Andy, you just had so many opportunities and it just kept coming back to poker. You played cards as a kid. This was a real passion. So even though you may have done the right thing and gone to law school, isn't it true that you kind of have focused on your passion, which so many people dream about?
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky in that regard that I've been able to go back to poker. You know, as a kid, I remember like seeing the World Series of Poker on TV and thinking like, hey, people actually make money playing games, and saw some TV show or something about blackjack and could not believe that people could beat the casino that way. In fact, it turned out later that at least for people like me, it was actually pretty easy for a while to really crush the casinos at blackjack.
You know, it's funny when I, you know, was doing poker, I am not a mathematician by any means. Math was my least favorite, and I am weak when it comes to math. But when I would talk to you or like Jesus Ferguson, people who are just math people by default, you know, and you guys would explain things to me in between breaks or something like that. And, you know, I would try to learn because I was not a poker player. And I mean, to be honest, I hated gambling. I hate to gamble. I'm like one of those people. I'm like, I don't like to put my money down on the table. I just don't. That's just not my thing. But when I would see your guys' brains at work and you guys would, you know, go, oh, there's a 33% chance of that. And there's a, you know, that's like a 56% chance of that. Like it would come so easily to you. For the average person like me, how hard is it to learn to, I mean, I think is it easier to count cards when it comes to blackjack because you're only playing, you know, with a couple of cards and then, you know, you're only adding, you know, one more card, maybe a couple more cards. But, you know, poker is such a, you know, there's some acting maybe going on because you could bluff or things like that and you can't see people's cards until you flip them over. But I mean, how do you teach people who aren't so good at math and maybe it's harder to sort of figure out percentages?
Well, first of all, we almost never actually doing hard math at the table. We do all the work away from the table, figure out simple ways of doing the math that you do need to do at the table. A lot of practice. For the MIT Blackjack team, we used to say that we could teach like a piece of driftwood to count cards. And it's not quite as simple as that, but pretty much counting cards is just, if you can count up and down, then you can count cards. Pretty much. You have to learn a basic strategy, but that's pretty simple. And, you know, you'd have to study it for a little while, but some people got it right away. And some people might take, you know, a couple of weeks to go and learn it. So the average person, blackjack is not too hard to learn. But the hard part is the discipline, right, is knowing that you are good enough to actually go play in the casino and practice. And the same thing in poker. It's a lot harder to actually teach someone how to be a good winning poker player for a tough casino game because you're playing against other players, and they've got a lot of experience. They know the odds. They know how to read you. And there's actually people nowadays in poker players, they like to talk. If you watch TV on poker nowadays versus 10, 15, 20 years ago, you'll hear a lot of talk about GTO, game theory optimal, and a lot of other words. And so you have people that are like know everything basically about how to play the game, but there really is no optimal way to play poker once you have more than two people. Whereas for blackjack, there's an optimal way to play just about every hand. With the one exception is sometimes you don't want to play optimally because you want to fool the casino to think you're just an average player.
Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say you have this 10-minute call because you're talking about beating blackjack, your DVD, and I know you get a lot of feedback just on this. If you can teach the average person to be a great player, Tell us about the 10-minute call and what you hear about people who have purchased your DVD, Beating Blackjack, and how it has impacted their ability to be good players.
Yeah, well, my DVD goes through, like, the whole nuts and bolts, everything that you need to know. But the main thing is you got to learn it. You got to look at the charts. You got to practice. And I also offer, with the purchase of a DVD, if you want to get a signed one, I offer a 10-minute coaching session on phone or FaceTime, however you want to do it, so people have some questions, some feedback, so I can ask them some questions about where they're playing and how they're playing, because the rules change, the conditions change. So it can be a little bit complicated. You can't just go into any casino and beat the game without knowing what the rules are and other conditions. But you can learn. I can teach you how to do it pretty quickly.
That's so interesting. You know, I've been around a lot of, like, I've been around some of the GOATs, like some of the biggest athletes in the world, not just poker players, but guys that like to play poker.
Like Tom Brady, who...
Right, exactly. Who's coming back for another? Why? He's going to get hurt. Anyways, so like some of the biggest players, right, that some of the retired players that have just ungodly amounts of money, they love to play poker. They love to gamble. I've been around them in Vegas at, you know, golf tournaments, and you will see them in the casinos. And it's like they're compulsive gamblers. And it's not so much that they need more money, right? I see this. It's like when they're not playing their game anymore, when they've been at the top and they've won multiple championships, right? It's almost like I see this. It's even when they're playing a charity golf tournament, they have these side bets, you know, who can hit their driver the farthest, who, you know, whatever, who's closest to the hole. It's like they have all these side bets, almost like poker players, you know, when you're sitting at the table, you have all these stupid side bets going on or whatever, just to make more money. But it's like the thrill of it. It's like the thrill of betting big, but you might lose it all or what have you. To me, that's such an interesting human kind of dynamic, the psyche of it all. It's so interesting to me as an outsider who isn't drawn to gambling that way, because I'm so, you know, adverse to losing my money, you know, because I'm one of those people, I've worked so hard for my money, I can't lose it, even though, you know, you could probably double your money or triple your money or whatever.
That's why you're not a poker player.
Right. I'm not a gambler, period. You know, I might go and put some, you know, $20 in a slot machine, which is the worst, right? I mean, the worst odds probably. But
Ask Andy.
Andy, is slot machine the worst?
You can win money at some slot machines, but most of them, it's one of the worst bets in the casino.
Yeah, see, but what do you think about athletes that have been on the top of their game and then they just want to go and gamble? I mean, what is it about the human psyche that people, I mean, you have 2 degrees from MIT, you have electrical engineering degrees, and you have, a Harvard law degree, and you're still playing professional poker and you're making a lot of money at it. I mean, I'm sure the money is great, but there has to be that thrill that draws you as well, right? I mean, is it the thrill that you can beat the casino?
Yeah, that's definitely part of the thrill. I think a lot of the people on the MIT Blackjack team, we would have made more money if we had gone out and gotten jobs at like Google or
sure,
Facebook early on, right? But we chose this because we love the challenge of like beating it's David versus Goliath.
Right, the establishment.
The casino companies, the establishment. I remember the movie 21, which a lot of it was made up and fictionalized, but there was like one scene in particular that I really loved, and he's playing all night in the casino, and he kind of walks outside, and it's really bright because it's early in the morning, and he's like hiding his eyes, and then he goes and this big grin goes comes on his face when he like realizes that he just, even though like it was tiring and grueling and everything, he just crushed the casino for, you know, $50,000 or $100,000, whatever they just won. And that's just a great feeling to have to know that you could go out there and beat Goliath.
Wow. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking about that. And, you know, in my job, I guess when I'm in front of a judge, it's kind of like that, and especially when I'm fighting up against some big companies. But it certainly doesn't sound like the thrill that Andy's talking about now. We got to take a break. We'll talk more to Andy Block after this. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. I love it. Love game.
All right, we're back. I'm Alan Gurvey. We're talking to professional poker player Andy Block, and I'm sure he's heard that song.
Oh, yeah. Another
time
cliche.
Or two.
I
but,
love
you know,
song.
Our board is lighting up here. A lot of people want to know, Andy, how you go about going into a casino or what happens to you. Does security stop you right away? Are people trying to take advantage of you and coming up to you and saying, play a couple of hands for me?
Yeah, there aren't too many casinos that I can go in these days and bet big money at blackjack. They're just going to kick me out. There's a few places like here that before I've ever played a hand of blackjack, before they even opened, I showed up opening night for a couple places and got recognized. And they said, hey, the poker room's over there. You're welcome to play poker, but you know, no blackjack for you. I've even gotten kicked out of places or barred from playing slot machines.
Why?
Poker, which you can get in that you can get in as a video poker, and make some money off of that. I mean, that's a whole nother topic.
Well, wait, how do you cheat at video poker?
There's no cheating.
I don't use the word cheating.
Well, I'm sorry.
Wait,
I mean,
you're talking to a professional.
I know, but how do you change? I don't understand how you can do that.
I'm ready.
I've played video poker. There's nothing you can do.
So there's two ways. One is sometimes casinos set the odds on the payouts on the machine, so you actually have a slight edge. And then second, you can combine that with cash back and promotions. And I used to do a lot of promotional drawings and stuff, and casinos sometimes would like give away $250,000 or whatever. And I would play a ton of video poker on the weekend and get a ton of drawings and then usually end up one of the winners of those drawings.
Wow, so, just because you played so much, the odds were in your favor.
Yeah, well, it's not just playing so much. Knowing the machines to play, and I don't mean which machines are lucky, you can actually see the payouts for the video poker machines. And some of them might be a slight advantage or a slight disadvantage, but the casino's giving you like 0.5% or 1% cash
back. See, these are the things I don't even understand.
Well,
it's like over my head.
does anyone want to go toe to toe with you on this stuff? Leanne does apparently, but I'm just staying quiet. I'm just going to be a lawyer here.
But I think that's great that he even understands that. But see, I would go in. I sit at a machine that nobody's sitting at, and I'm like, this looks good.
I just try and stay away from smokers. That's all.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah, but yeah. Andy, I got to ask you. You know, you've had such an incredible career. Has your family finally, you know, come to believe that maybe this was the best thing you could have done with your life rather than being a boring lawyer like me?
You know, my dad was always like, you know, you need to have a plan B. But I mean, it seems like you got plan B and plan C and you're still on plan A.
Yeah, there's lots of different plans. My parents, I think, were a little bit upset when I quit my first or second job after college and just started playing poker and blackjack for a while. And then what turned them around was not when I was on TV, but when their friends would come up and say, hey, I saw your son on TV.
You know, right.
That's funny.
Of course.
You know, winning, coming second in a $1 million, that kind of thing. So then they thought, like, okay, then it's finally okay. And then I actually, like, so I was playing poker and blackjack, then went back to law school, and then went back to poker and blackjack. So I've gone back and forth.
But you're not gonna go back to law.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. A couple of years ago, I went and took the patent bar, but it was one of the most boring things I've ever.
Wait, what is that? Wait, hold on. I'm not a lawyer. What does that mean? What's a patent bar?
Don't ask. It's boring.
Yeah, you have to get licensed to be a lawyer, and every state has their own bar. But for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, if you want to write patents, you have to go because really incredibly boring.
Oh, that's patent.
Right.
I thought you said patent, like general patent.
We're not talking about shoes, like patent leather shoes.
We're talking about
law. Andy, what's next for Andy Block? Because you're talking, well, you know, maybe I'll think about it if the right opportunity. But now, not thinking into the future, immediately coming up, what do you got going on?
Yeah, so I've got a part-time job here working on some sports betting stuff. And I have a bunch of side projects, a bunch of websites that I just create when I have an idea. Like, my wife was complaining about Starbucks being out of oat milk, so I made a website called Sorry Bucks that you can go and search all the Starbucks near you and see not just oat milk, but all the stuff that they may have.
And when you say you create it, you like code it and like actually do all the software for it?
Yeah, exactly. See? Yeah, and I haven't really been pushing it. I haven't been marketing it or anything. It's kind of a side project.
Here's a good opportunity
for you
to do it.
This is what all the ultra-smart people do.
I don't care about ultra-smart. I want him to promote it right now. Tell us how people can get to it.
Okay. You go to sorrybucks.com, sorrybucks.com, and then it says it's a very simple thing. There's actually no advertising on it yet. You just click the button for find my location, or you enter your location, and then it puts
That's
up
so cool.
all those Starbucks locations, and then you can search in there for what you want. Like you can put in oat milk, or you can put in caramel, or whatever Starbucks has a problem with that they're out of, and it will show you on the map all the Starbucks near you. And it's way faster than the Starbucks app. Like if they're out of something, you have to go out and you have to select a new store, and then you have to go see whether.
Yeah, you don't want to do any of that. We only have a minute, Andy. You tweet at Andy_Block, B-L-O-C-H. Yeah. Some interesting tweets if people want to see some, a lot of different topics, not just poker, of course. What other stuff in the last 30 seconds should we look for from Andy Block?
I've been following a lot of the COVID data stuff. Wordle, I created a Wordle solver that you can go to WordLV, LV for Las Vegas.com. And all this stuff, most of it you can find on my personal website, labvegas.com. Or for the poker and blackjack information, you can just go to andyblock.com.
And I did notice, Andy, you talking about Nevada and COVID numbers for young people going up. So that may be for another time, because
yes,
we want to hear about that.
Andy Block,
thank you so much for joining us on Gervie's Law.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy. Take care. Be well. Leanne Tweeden, this was fun.
It was a lot of fun. I can't believe the hour's over.
Let's do it again next week.
Next week.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
See you all next week.
Bye.